Reed, have you ever had a pizza party, either at your work or with friends or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, either kids' birthdays or stuff at work or whatever, yeah.
There's an interesting Wikipedia article about pizza parties. Let me share with you some of the things they say here. The world's largest pizza party was held in Rome, where 1,146 people dined on pizza together.
I mean, I'm going to guess that was probably pretty good pizza, though. They didn't order from someplace down the street or a chain or something.
In September of 2020, Hormel Foods hosted the world's largest virtual pizza party. More than 3,000 people joined a Zoom-hosted pizza party. Now, I'm not sure that actually characterizes as a pizza party because you're technically not together sharing pizza.
I feel like we throw the word virtual in and then it can become a record for anything pretty much. I think this afternoon, virtually, the most people will skateboard together that's ever happened.
I've been on some Zoom meetings where we beat the virtual record of the number of people multitasking during the meeting.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and patient engagement strategies for hospitals, health systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into digital tools, solutions, and strategies that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information with you and have fun along the way. Thanks for joining us. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to Touchpoint. Welcome to episode number 300. We've talked about it, Chris, for a few weeks now, maybe a couple of months, but we are here 300 episodes later.
I feel like I should be dressed like a Spartan and carrying a spear.
That's the first thing that came to my mind, too, was the movie. I mean, 300 is not that common of a number. Again, the movie and also maybe bowling are the two things that come to mind for me.
It's a perfect score, right, in bowling? I did some research, Reed, because you always ask me about the number. It's a triangular number.
Triangular number.
It's the sum of a pair of twin primes.
Oh.
149 plus 151. It's also the sum of 10 consecutive primes.
That's a lot of math. Another interesting stat on 300, maximum legal speed of a paintball that's been shot is 300 feet per second.
301 is way too much.
I don't know. 300, here we are, 300 episodes later. As we get ready to round out the year and make our way into complete year six.
Yeah, we're about 5 2/3 of a year into our podcasting now.
Okay. All right. Well, there we go. And thank you all for listening. We're going to talk a little bit more about the show and what has happened, what's to come, all that kind of fun stuff. But before we do, wanted to quickly point out, one, we appreciate the support. Two, the website, touchpoint.health. If you make your way over there, you will notice something called the TPS report. Click on that. All it does is ask for your name and email address, and then we send you an email on Monday mornings. 5 articles to start your week. That's it. No big commitment. We're not going to sell the list. But we'd love for you to sign up. Love for it to send you this email. Hopefully, it's a few articles that kind of gets the brain working on Monday morning. But we'll pause here for a second and then come back and talk more about the number 300.
Chris, in today's digital age, your online reputation, as we all know, is crucial. With customers relying on online reviews, your first impression is also compared directly with your competitors.
Sure is. And Reed, consider this. 86% of patients today read online reviews, and 73% demand that healthcare provider has a minimum 4-star rating.
Demand. They demand it.
Yeah, they do.
Well, to stand out, choose reputation to help amplify your brand and to build trust. Be the provider of choice in your area, understand patient sentiment, get actionable insights, and even foster patient loyalty.
And look, here's the easy way you could do that. All you need to do is go visit reputation.com/touchpoint. That's reputation.com/touchpoint, where you can download their healthcare online reputation management guide and build a reputation that performs for you. So you just said we're going to talk more about the number 300. We're actually going to kind of reflect back on the 300 episodes that we've done. Well, theoretically, we've done 299 episodes, I suppose, right? This is the 300th official episode. I think it's a good point for us to kind of reflect back. Reed, we're also going to introduce something a little bit different in this episode. And that's a thing that I've been doing with some of the people I've been interviewing, and those that have been privy to this may know that at the end of our expert interviews, I actually record just a little bit extra conversation with our guests. For lack of a better term, I'm calling this segment Three Questions with Chris Boyer.
I like it. Yeah, you've been doing this for a little while now. Excited to roll these out. So this will be fun.
We hear a lot about the expertise of that topic, of whatever we're talking about in that show. But each and every one of our guests, they're experts because of their experience and all the work that they've done. So I thought, you know, using three questions as a way to kind of dig a little bit deeper into who they are as individuals, who they are as people, and get to know a different side of the guest rather than, you know, their expertise around that topic. Well, let's learn a little bit more about them. And Reed, you don't know about these questions because I never asked you them before.
That's right.
So I think while throughout the episode today, we're going to kind of intersperse these with others. Why don't we kick it off today with you actually sitting down and going through the three questions with Chris Boyer. Are you up for it?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay, sure. Great. Simply, it's just three questions to get us to know you a little bit better, get to know the other side of you. And I think many people listening in already know that, but I'm going to go ahead and ask them of you anyway. So ready for question number one. Here it is. What is your favorite social media account and why?
Boy, that's a good question. I guess I'll still say Twitter at this point. It may be more from a sentimental standpoint. I mean, I'm probably one of the few, like some of us, that have our actual name as our Twitter handle. I mean, obviously, that would be hard to do at this point. But yeah, I'm gonna guess Twitter. That's where you and I met. That's where I met a lot of folks in the space, and you know, kind of helped me pave a way for really what I'm doing now in some ways.
I kind of agree with you there, but I mean, I just recently went back and looked at some of my earlier tweets. You know, the way we use these social media accounts have changed so much over the last, you know, umpteen years that we've been doing it. So it's interesting. I wonder if we asked ourselves in like 3 or 4 years the same question, if that may have changed.
Well, it's funny. I don't know that I really even use it all that much. I mean, not like we used to your point. So yeah, it's more of a sentimental thing at this point, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's good. So, all right, you ready for question number two?
Yeah.
You and I, we moderate a lot of meetings at work and all of that. So this is going to be more of a question around that. What is your favorite meeting icebreaker?
I will say this works better in person than it does virtually. Well, potentially. We've got like a deck of cards that just have random pictures. It's not like playing cards, but they've just got random pictures of things on them. You know, it could be, you know, different scenes or art or objects or whatever, but it's just a whole bunch of stuff, right? And everybody grabs one and then talks about what it represents about, you know, kind of where they are. Could be a really pretty island, and it, you know, that could be both positive or negative. You know, they feel like they're on an island, or that what they're doing is exactly where they want to be, or so, you know what I mean. So anyway, that's kind of a fun way to kind of see where people are and kind of how they're feeling without, you know, them directly having to share, you know, how they're doing, so to speak.
That's really cool. I don't think I've ever done that icebreaker before. And where do you get these cards? Are these things that you can purchase, or?
That's a good question. I'll have to ask. I'll find out. Maybe that's a good recommendation for a future episode. If it's a 30-minute or an hour-long meeting, it's not worth it because you're going to chew up a lot of time. But if it's like at a retreat or something like that, where you've got a day or day and a half or something, it's a good way, good exercise to do at some point.
I love it. Well, that's a good answer. All right. You're almost graduated from the three questions. Here's the third question. Share with us the name of one of the most influential books you've ever read. Now, it could be a business book. It could be a personal book. It could be whatever book it is.
I'll probably kind of reach back into the archives here a little bit. I'm going to actually mention two, and they're kind of in the same genre. One is Hardwiring Excellence, Purpose, Worthwhile Work, and Making a Difference by Quint Studer. Actually, I just picked it up. I had it here on my desk. Originally was published in 2003. Take that for what it's worth relative to technology and kind of what we do now. For those that were early on in kind of the patient experience journey, obviously Stuker Group was a big name in that space. But anyway, Quint, the reason I got into healthcare, blah, blah, blah. That's another story for another day. But this was a really interesting book for me as I got started in healthcare, really understanding what made sense, the operations, and kind of what at the time was, you know, a movement in healthcare and kind of where everything was headed around. I guess those early days of even consumerism, even though we didn't call it that. The other one, which again, a lot along the same lines, but If Disney Ran Your Hospital, Fred Lee. I got that book in 2004 when I was working at Triad. That is an interesting one too, relative to just, you know, thinking about experience in a little bit of a different way. So those were two that I, you know, I'll reference back to every now and then for a particular antidote or something like that. But
I think it's pretty telling that you had just one of those books on your desk. It must be very influential for you.
Actually, I have both of them on my desk.
Wow. Well, this is great. I'm glad that you went through the three questions now, Reed. And as we listen to some of the others throughout the episode, you'll hear that people have different takes on all of this. So that's awesome, Reed. Okay, well, with that, why don't we go and listen to one of our former guests as he shares his three questions. Okay, I'm here with Steve Liebforth, who works for Castle Connolly. Steve, I wanted to see if you're up for facing the three questions challenge.
I will give it a go.
Okay, so question number one, what's your favorite social media account?
I would say Instagram.
Ooh, Instagram. Now, I follow you on Instagram, so I kind of know why you like it, but why? You tell me why. Why is it your favorite?
Yeah, I've moved to spending most of my time there. There and Twitter are probably the two big ones, but Instagram is where I probably have the most connection to family, friends, and others. And then I am definitely a foodie, so I love following a lot of different restaurants and finding places to eat while I'm traveling as well.
Well, I know that I'm honored enough to be your friend on Instagram, but do you have a lot of work colleagues following you on Instagram as well?
I'm relatively new in my new position, so not yet, but I would say my last job, definitely. And it's been great because after I left the last job, I've been able to stay connected with a whole lot of folks that I used to work with. So definitely.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. Are you ready for question number two?
I am.
Okay. Tell me your favorite business book that you've read.
My favorite business book goes back to the early days of the internet and building websites. It is called Don't Make Me Think by Steve Krug, K-R-U-G. And it has stuck with me my entire career. And basically the whole premise of the book is that if you're making something simple for someone that has a good understanding of a topic, they don't mind. But if someone doesn't understand a topic or, you know, usability of around a website and you make it easy for someone that might struggle with it, it benefits them greatly.
I love that book. Don't Make Me Think. I mean, that's really the adage of the modern digital user. Just make it as easy as possible for them to do the next step. Don't make them think. That's a great book. I'm going to put that back onto my reading list because it's been years since I read that. I'm sure it's been updated since then.
Yeah, I'd be really curious to read it now, probably 15 years later. Nope, still certainly relevant.
Yeah, it certainly is. Okay, are you ready for the third and final question?
Let's do it.
What online resource do you turn to the most?
Sadly, probably social media. I wish that wasn't the case. still use Twitter for news, Instagram, as I mentioned earlier, and probably all the travel apps, you know, looking for food with Yelp. That's probably another one. United, Marriott, all my travel are probably the big ones.
It's interesting to think that we have all this now. You kind of group them all together as social media accounts because I get it. Instagram, Twitter, Yelp even, right? They're all becoming like these communities of people that are interested in certain topics.
Well, it gives you – I like to explore, right? If I go somewhere new, I like to walk around a city, find things, but it definitely accelerates that, right? It finds hidden gems. Atlas Obscura, I don't know if you've ever used that.
But, oh, yeah.
That is an app that I just found a concrete-covered car recently down near University of Chicago. it was a fun little find, and so lots of little things like that are always fun to find. So, again, I think, I'll just group kind of all those together.
That's really interesting. Well, Steve, thanks for participating in Three Questions. I think we learned a little bit more about you. And for those listening in, definitely seek out Steve on all of his favorite social channels. Thanks again.
Coming soon from Greystone, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media, live from HCIC, a new podcast that brings you front row access to the latest innovative strategies that are shaping tomorrow's healthcare industry. In this 12-part series, as recorded live at the Healthcare Internet Conference, we'll hear from industry experts such as Paul Mattson of the Cleveland Clinic, Kathy Smith of Roper St. Francis Healthcare, David Feinberg from Mount Sinai Health System, Rose Glenn from Michigan Medicine, and many others. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcasting platform. This podcast series is brought to you by Greystone.net, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media.
All right, Chris, let's take another step in the journey here. Again, I think you mentioned earlier we've been doing this, what is coming up to 6 years. You know, we're rounding out this calendar year, but we're over 5.5 years into this thing. And a lot's happened over that time. I moved to Nashville, you know, went from being a consultant to now back working on the hospital side of the equation. What about you?
When we first started, I was living in an apartment downtown Minneapolis. My wife and I have now subsequently, we got married. We moved into a house. And as I mentioned a couple episodes ago, we're expecting our first coming up in a few weeks here. So some major milestone changes, although physically I didn't move as far as you did. And then career-wise, I also work for a health system. I think you and I are now, if it's funny, we're now working in very similar roles. We're sharing things all the time about some of the same challenges that we're facing. But yet we're still in this space doing what we love. I guess we must really love what we do.
I think so. We've both been a consultant at the same time. We both worked at a hospital at the same time. I've been a consultant while you're working in a hospital. I guess the only thing that hasn't happened is you haven't been a consultant while I worked at a hospital, but who knows? You never know.
Well, let's check back in 300 episodes and see.
Yeah, see what else has happened. We may be both working in NASCAR by then.
We can only hope.
Yeah. Well, looking back at how we started, and again, we're not going to read all 300 episodes out loud, but I think it's funny to kind of look back at some of these initial ones. You know, episode one, customer journey mapping, which is still critically important. I think that's interesting, followed by content management systems, which that was sort of the first appearance of Ed Bennett, right?
Yeah, the first of many. Then we, episode three, we jumped into online reputation management with our good friend Rob Bergfeld, who is no longer working in healthcare, but he still is very much connected in. And then we jumped to CRM, customer relationship management, with someone that we both still interact with quite regularly, Justin Rodriguez, right?
Yeah, he's actually on my team here at Arden.
There you go.
So anyway, and then episode five, Voice of the Customer with Matt Gove, and episode six, Digital Professionalism with Dr. Brian Vardabedian, who is obviously through many iterations had his own show and been on this show and is still just such a trusted voice in the space.
Episode seven, we looked at the digital team structure with our friend Jared Johnson, who you all may know as he runs his own podcast at this time now. But back then, he jumped on to share a little bit about his thoughts. And then episode eight involved someone that kind of connected my past to my present. The title of the show is Evolving Role of SEO, and it was Patrick Singson, and he and I worked together way back when, and he did SEO for a large major health company, and he and I worked there together. He no longer works in healthcare. He actually lives in a yurt and makes money with crypto. So think about the pathways that our guests can go down. Anyway.
Well, another one that a lot of folks know and you and I know, especially from the early days in social media, episode nine, intersection of wearables and medical devices. Dana Lewis, who is doing a lot of work in that space, but early on was a student at the University of Alabama and very active, the hashtag HCSM. and had a chat and all that kind of fun stuff. And then episode number 10, Judy Nyman, she runs the Healthcare Marketing and Physician Strategy Summit, which we have obviously been very involved with over the years, even produced shows from the conference. And she's been a great, great friend and advocate. But episode 10, Choosing the Right Conference. So that rounds out kind of the first 10 episodes of the show, you know, over 5 years ago.
You know, Reid, I look back at those and, you know, they're very much tactical, right? We were talking about either specific things or concepts, very simple concepts. Over the years, we've really evolved the tone and the topics that we talk about on the show. It's just interesting to see how, as this podcast has evolved, the industry has evolved with us. So if you look back, right, at the last 300 or 299 episodes, can you pick out like maybe three of your favorite top episodes?
Yeah, the first one, I was kind of going back through looking. And the first one, which I think is interesting, was actually episode number 73 from June the 27th back in 2018. So we've been going a little over a year, close to a year and a half, I guess. Deep Learning in Healthcare is what it was called. In this episode, we talked about artificial intelligence, the adoption of machine learning in the clinical and marketing communications efforts in hospitals. And I thought it was really interesting because this may, I don't know if this was the first time, but yeah, it may have been the first time we had Abhi on. But Abhi Sharma, who's the VP of product over at Loyal, he came on and talked about kind of the practical use cases of AI and realistically how we've already accepted and welcomed the use of machine learning, you know, in our lives. So that was a fun episode.
One that jumps out to, for me, is episode 68, around the same time, a couple of months earlier, May 23rd, where we talked about Yelp or HCAHPS, which is better to measure patient experience.
Yeah.
Still one of our top performing ones, by the way. This is where we talked through like a study that was done that showed how HCAHPS and Yelp, they basically compared them. I think it was in JAMA, actually, that they had this article that was published. And they showed that in some cases, Yelp can predict the patient experience a little bit better. And speaking of Studer, you mentioned earlier, BG Porter of the Studer Group was our guest. And he talked about consumerism and how Studer Group has embraced this concept of consumerism before it was even called that in healthcare. So it's a really great episode. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, BG's such a smart mind, and he and Quint really made the Studer Group what it was before it was sold to Huron. And so anyway, it was great to get him on the show, certainly. Second one that came to mind for me, episode number 165, the telemedicine toothpaste is out of the tube. This is from April Fools of 2020. Kind of funny thing about it. Now, this was obviously in response to, you know, what we were seeing in the pandemic. This obviously was very early in the pandemic. We didn't realize that. But that we talked about how the regulations had eased on the utilization and the reimbursement of telemedicine. And that, you know, basically you could use anything to do these telemedicine visits, right? Like you could use, you know, Facebook or, you know, Zoom or whatever it was. So we talked about the history of telemedicine and the changes that had recently occurred nationally due to the pandemic and what that really meant for behavior in the future. That was a fun one and still very relevant today.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. My second most favorite is Your Website Isn't Your Website Anymore, episode 115. So very close to yours. Again, we're picking some that are close to one another. This is where we were talking about how while the hospital website is important, there are so many other ways people can interact with you online that where is the role of your website compared to all these other digital touch points, social media and review sites and third-party sites and stuff like that. And we also got into search engines and personalization. And what I particularly love about that episode, and I keep bringing it up, is because Carrie Lichen, good friend of the show, we were scheduled to interview about something else. And we started talking about this topic maybe 5 minutes before we hit record on the microphone. And we ended up talking for almost a half an hour about this concept because she was thinking about it at the same time. So that's kind of what became the genesis of this episode. It still is true today, too.
Still true today. The third one that kind of came to mind for me was episode 221 from April the 28th, 2021. Staffing the marketing department for the new normal. So again, we were talking about the new normal post-pandemic world and kind of the what the marketing leadership is faced with. Consumer expectations, the marketing landscape itself, the roles and responsibilities, you know, what that kind of needs to evolve to support the current state. So we talked a lot about that. And funny enough, Bobby Ratu, who has been a great advocate of the show, but also had a number of his own shows and been a part of the network for a long time. He actually came on and talked about partnering with local universities to ensure that, you know, that they're developing the right skills in students so they can support, you know, this new normal. And so he's still doing that today. I would encourage you to follow him, reach out to him. But he's doing some really cool stuff at Anderson University over in South Carolina around content and podcasting and documentaries and all kinds of fun stuff there, and really bringing up that next generation to support the new normal.
I think it's interesting. You and I both pick three episodes that are from three different, I guess, centuries of our podcast, right? So mine's episode 228, yeah. The Patchwork Quilt of Healthcare Data, where we were talking about, and this is kind of shows you how our topics have evolved over time, the challenge of, in this day and age, of developing first-party data strategies, how you can track healthcare data. And this was just prior to the whole Facebook Pixel thing, but it was really an insightful article. It almost predicted the Facebook Pixel debacle. That just interesting as we look back, Reid, who would have thought? I mean, when we first started, we never thought we'd get past 6 months.
I mean, I don't know that I had any real preconceived ideas or notions. I think pretty quickly I figured out that putting out a podcast every week is a lot. And so as people have asked me, you know, advice on podcasting, tell them to take a look at what we're doing and just do the opposite. Don't do it. don't make it as long as we make it. Don't make it as frequent as we make it. And don't have a co-host, because then you got to coordinate schedules and all that kind of stuff. So it's much easier just to record yourself talking for 10 or 15 minutes. But it works for us. And I'm glad we've done it the way we've done it.
I'm talking with Kristen Folder of Hearsay. Kristen, thanks for being part of the three questions segment of the show.
Happy to do it, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So the whole point about this is I'm going to ask you three questions, and I want you to answer them honestly. But the way you answer your questions is going to tell a lot to people listening in about you. So let me ask you, the first question is this. What is the best social media platform that you use and why?
Oh, hands down, Twitter. the reason I'll say this is several fold. Okay, first of all, so I focus on communications, public relations, and media, right? So my world lives on Twitter. Reporters, media, a lot of times are on Twitter. So I get to follow a lot of the reporters that I want to engage for my clients, that I want to know what they're writing about, that I, you know, use to keep informed. And so there are times that I can go onto Twitter and find, without a doubt, what's happening in the world. Number two, the other reason that I love Twitter, and I recognize that not everybody has the same, because we all follow different people. I use Twitter for humor. I know that Twitter can go down into rabbit holes and people can be really mean and the trolls. I don't see much of that at all. I follow, like I said, I follow really smart, witty, I follow reporters, I follow writers. And so I find that I go onto Twitter, and there is never a time I'm not giggling or laughing out loud. And so somebody's commentary on what's happening in the world, or, you know, a really weird thing that happened in the news cycle, you know, I find it to be informative and funny. And so I need both in my life. I love to be informed, and it can be really hard and overwhelming to be informed in today's world because it's really dark and there's a lot of heavy things going on. And so I need that humor. So hands down Twitter. And I recognize that that's going to be a different answer for other people, but for me, hands down.
Ready for the second question?
I guess so. Yeah.
Okay. Apple or a PC?
PC. So I use PCs. You asked me to be as verbose as possible or as I want to be when answering these questions. And so maybe I shouldn't, because this might make some people not like me, but early days, I tend to be the person who kind of goes, I don't want to do what everybody else does. And so when everybody else had an iPhone, I said, no, I'm not going to get an iPhone. It was like really just as silly as that. And I was always a PC person. So I have a Samsung phone and I work on a PC. I have an Apple in the closet, but it's not my comfort zone.
I love it. Okay, you ready for the third question?
Sure.
I know that you spend a lot of time researching information online. What is your most favorite online resource to go to for information and why?
Oh my goodness. Okay, so I'm going to give you an answer that's probably going to be very frustrating to you and people are going to laugh and roll their eyes. Google. I recognize that Google is not in and of itself informative. I recognize that, right? But I don't go to one place over and over specifically. I mean, I am, as I mentioned before, I'm a pretty hungry, curious person. And so I do a lot of reading and scanning of information. And so I can't tell you that, you know, I spend the majority of my time going to the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. I go to those places, but there's never one that I spend the most time on. My husband would tell you that it is a joke around our house that if I hear something on the radio or if I'm watching television and somebody says something about something that I don't understand or haven't heard before, within seconds, I'm on Google and typing it in. And so it's become a love language for my husband where he will go, I'll Google it for you, right? Like, I know that you can't sleep tonight if you don't know that information. And so for me, it really is, Google represents, it is like a commercial for Google. And I don't know them as a company. I think Google represents the world that I love, which is like unfettered access to information and details about something that I might not understand. And so I'm sorry if that's a really frustrating response. And people are like, I would like it. But I am so curious about the randomest things that Google is the place that I go to the most because it leads me to the sources, the credible and accurate sources that then provide me with the information for which I was looking.
I love that answer. That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
That is amazing. Kristen, thank you for spending some time answering our three questions.
I hope it was valuable or fun or interesting or entertaining or something. I don't know.
All right, Chris, as we start to wind things down here on episode 300, maybe let's shift a little bit and talk about, you know, we typically do a recommendation, but maybe these are recommendations / predictions / insights, if you will, for what, you know, what we see kind of, you know, coming down the line, right, and kind of where things are headed. You know, I'll jump in. The first one that kind of comes to mind for me, I've said this a whole bunch on the show, but I think even in my new role, it's becoming more and more real for me is that it's just getting harder and harder to predict and understand where what we're doing starts and stops. So as I've worked with our clinical operations folks and operations in general and finance and all these areas, you know, really taking into account what is digital, like it's getting harder to define that. You know, it's harder for me to understand, you know, is what I'm doing marketing?
Yeah. Right.
I don't know. So I think that's the first thing for me. We'll continue to see that. We'll continue to see that expand. And so as marketers, as folks that are in charge of digital, either becoming really good partners, understanding who else within your organization you need to partner with, get to be best friends with, that kind of thing. Is super important.
I agree with that 100%. Here's something that I see, Reid, is that the use of data and data systems, it's so advanced and on the various different platforms and tools and technologies that we have to track data it becomes like a dream for those of us who really like data to help us guide decisions, because now we have so much data around our customers using digital platforms that we can actually track them a little bit better. We can actually understand their intentions and use predictive AI modeling and things like that to really leverage data in a way that before it was just like, oh, well, we measured, 300 people coming to our website and 5% of them clicked on the ad. Those are very rudimentary ways of measurement. Now we're getting like very sophisticated. We're like hitting calculus level advancements in the way we're kind of measuring now with our customer behavior. And I'm really excited about that. And so having a data strategy is critically important.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. I think another one for me is the people side of the equation. So we mentioned it earlier. I mentioned it in that episode that Bobby came on. But think about skills, and we're trying to educate people today to do things 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now. Well, what is marketing 20 years from now? Like I don't know. I mean, so how do you educate people now? How do you talk to people now about what this space is? It kind of goes back to my first point a little bit, but I think trying to make sure that we're supporting the staff that we have. We're not a production shop where we're just churning out ads, for example, or something like that, right? We've got to be critical and strategic thinkers working with finance, to your point, around data and ROI and those types of things. So, just making sure that we're investing in the people that we have, because there's a good chance they get burnout as well. That's not just our clinical folks. How do we support them and set them up for success?
I like that. And I think, as we look at more and more, it's again, it's like, What is that marketing team of the future going to look like? What is the digital team of the future going to look like? When you and I started, I never thought we'd be talking about having data people on our team specifically, right? But that's now becoming imperative, right? Analysts and data people. So I like that. All right. My second thing that I see is actually kind of a counter of the first one. Remember, I said the use of data and data systems are going to be truly helpful for us as we go forward. But I also believe that on the flip side of that, measurement and tracking is going to become even more difficult for us to do. We've talked about like the Facebook pixel and how many of us listening in had to go through and decommission the Facebook pixel and, making sure based on the advice and requests of our legal teams, making sure that we're being very careful and cautious with how we're measuring. And you and I did an episode about this, right? The problem with the pixel, read a couple weeks ago.
Right.
I see us like, and I was just reading an article this weekend about the Supreme Court is going to see three cases this docket, all of which can potentially dramatically negatively impact the way social media content and measurement occurs. And I'll link the article in the show notes because it's really fascinating to think about. But given everything and all the sensitivities around data security and privacy and the fact that, there is this like concept that data misinformation is running wild and there's no moderation out there, I have a feeling that measurement and tracking is just going to become notoriously more and more difficult. And again, just doubling down on this, you need to start building your first party data strategies. That's the way to get through it. Collect your own data on your customers and get permission of them to communicate. That's my number two kind of prediction or thought for the future.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And that is a very interesting kind of thought process. And you're right. A lot of things that we're talking about today, I maybe could have imagined, but didn't think, we would be talking about these things in 5 years. I think the other thing that comes to mind for me is, historically, we've been very focused on what we own, right? Like our websites. Right. And that's kind of the destination. I think the idea of what and kind of how we define consumerism is changing all of that. So I think pre-pandemic consumerism was much more, centric on like, well, how do people communicate with us? Right. So it was around chatbots and it was around online scheduling and, kind of those types of things. And I think the consumerism now includes where and how they receive their care. I don't know that the website is the center of all this anymore, where people are making these decisions. So you and I have talked about this, you know, what, you know, Google doesn't really want you leaving the search result page and, you know, some of those types of things. I think we've got to think more consumer centric about, it's less about the website. It's less about the hospital. It's more about the consumer and how we meet them and provide them what they're looking for, where they want it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's just like consumerism has shifted over the years. In this particular case, it's coming on full force. Okay, so here's my last and final kind of thought for the day. I think there's a lot of talk about disruption coming to our industry. Again, another article over the weekend talking about the Amazon, CVS, and Walmart, you know, movements into the space and like how disruptive that is. But, you know, there are a lot of people that are also kind of what I call virtue signaling into the space, saying, well, that's because we as healthcare entities, we are too slow to move, we're too slow to adopt. I don't disagree with the statements, but I will say that really is not truly understanding the situation here. Disruption is going to occur. Disruption is going to change. Maybe it's not going to be as disruptive as you think. It's going to be very incremental. But I think that disruption is going to come in the form of like partnerships among hospitals, among businesses, both local and national businesses, and local municipalities as well as governments. We're going to start to see changes fundamentally in our industry that are going to disrupt the way we do business. And that's going to happen through groups coming together to collectively solve the problem. So this is less of a Amazon's going to come in and eat our lunch kind of thing, more of a, like kind of what the true moonshot movements back in the 60s were, where it's a number of people are going to come together to kind of solve these problems. And I really believe it's going to happen. It may not be as disruptive, quote unquote, as people think, but it's definitely going to happen. And the healthcare industry is clamoring for it. We may be slow. We may be cumbersome. We may be difficult to change things, but we know we need to change. And I think the change is going to happen with us at the helm of this, driving that change and driving it in the right way. I'm talking with Tom Heilman, who is the CEO of the Heilman Group. And today, Tom, are you ready for me to ask you three questions?
Fire away.
All right. Question number one, what is your favorite social media account?
Oh, good question. My favorite's LinkedIn. I know that may sound a little bit boring, but I love the ability to keep connected with people that I've worked with, customers, clients, the people who move around. I really like that. And then, of course, it's an extremely powerful B2B marketing engine. So I would say LinkedIn's my favorite.
Yeah, you could write a lot of great content. You could connect with a lot of people. I get a lot of content from LinkedIn. I have to agree with that. But what about all those solicitations? Come on, Tom. It's a little too much, don't you think?
Oh, it's interesting. The concept of in-mail and the solicitations do have seemed to have ramped up. I think maybe a few years ago, it didn't feel that way. So I think it's that fine line of kind of LinkedIn trying to monetize the platform and still provide the value. But I agree, if there are a way, and maybe there is, and I'm just not doing it, where you could be more precise about the type of solicitations that you get. Specifically, it seems like LinkedIn's always soliciting me for more LinkedIn. That would be really helpful.
That's great. All right. Question number two. What's your favorite meeting icebreaker?
Oh, great question. What do we go with? I like what would your favorite superpower be?
Ooh.
To make it a little more abstract and to keep you out of other topics. I mean, keep it kind of in a neutral topic. So if you could have any superhero's superpower, what would that be?
I think for me, it would be flying. What would yours be?
Mine similar, but I say teleportation, so I could go anywhere. So no more airplane flights or anything. If I wanted to be in San Francisco, I'd be in San Francisco. That kind of similar to flying though, right? The ability to get wherever you want this kind of quickly, I would think.
Yeah, you probably have to wear a lot fewer layers if you just transport yourself too. That's smart. I might have to change my answer to that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, I don't want to do mind reading's too painful, so we don't want that.
Exactly. All right, question number three. What's your favorite online resource, be it a website, blog, wherever, that you turn to the most? That's not your own social accounts or not your own website.
Well, that's a good question. What do I leave? I'm a big Seth Godin fan. So Akimbo, the podcast, and just Seth Godin's writing in general. So I love to read his thinking. I'm envious of people who write and think very well. And typically people who write well, think well. So I would go with that. I really like Seth Godin's. There's multiple sites and things associated with him there. But that's certainly, he's one of my go-to thinkers.
I love it. I met Seth Godin once, and he is as brilliant in just a conversation as he is in his speeches and on his content that he does. He's just one of those smart, sharp thinkers. Just love it. Very creative.
Yeah. When you get to interact with folks like that, a guy I met is another guy who's Michael Porter. I don't know if you're familiar with him, the business strategy guy. When you meet someone with that level of thinking, the authenticity of it, it's a fabulous experience, right? And Seth is that kind of person in overall thinking, but especially in the world of marketing where we live.
I love it. Well, hey, Tom, thanks for spending some time with us and sharing the answers to your three questions.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.
All right, Chris. Well, this is it. The end of this isn't it. I mean, we're gonna be back for episode 301, but this is the end of episode 300, and it really has been pretty wild to think about 300 episodes. You know, that's somewhere in the neighborhood of 18,000 hours of content. I'm guessing. I don't know exactly what the number is, but we certainly are thankful in just the support that we've received over the years. We've had so many people on the show. We've had so many people, sponsors and otherwise, support and contribute in various ways. I mentioned Judy earlier, but also Kathy and the folks over the Healthcare Internet Conference, the American Telemedicine Association. We've had a number of folks through the years really support us and help us, you know, spread the word. So it's been great.
Here's to another 300 more.
That's right. Well, for Chris Boyer, I'm Reed Smith, and we will see you back for episode 301 next week. This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.